It is Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker. Getting a little late start today. Whoa, I had a little problem. I'm always having a problem around here. Oh, man. Anyhow, it's... what is it today? This is the July the 22nd, 2014. And it's Tears Day. Yeah. So we're back at it here. We're at P.O. Box 401. Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, as usual, and that's where you send your donations for the radio show and any other donations you'd like to send along, and your snail mail and so forth and like that, and so we'll get it. That's right, we'll get it. Let's see where we're at here. I couldn't believe it last night when I picked up the local fish wrap newspaper. You know, this town's maybe 20,000. And that's sort of stretching it, maybe a little more, I don't know, but anyhow. They had in the newspaper, the Warsaw Times and Union, they had almost a half page on a story out of Florida where they discovered supposedly a couple of cops in some knee-jerk little town, a hell of a lot smaller than this one, had some connection allegedly to the Klan. Now, this story is going to go worldwide. And here we got all these things here in Indiana that we need to talk about. We got problems all over the place and people in other states, but they're going to jam this story in there. The Ku Klux Klan is putting out some literature around, and we're suspicious that a couple of cops may have gone to the meeting. That's their big deal. That is their big deal. No wonder newspapers are going broke. No wonder. Well, I guess the folks up there in Leith, North Dakota got their big celebration over that Craig Cobb is going down the road to another town there in North Dakota. And they had a big time. Oh, we did. We beat those white supremacists. Yeah, they had a big time picnic and maybe a parade. I don't know. Maybe the Indians came up and paraded for them. They got a Mongol tribe down a few miles away from them, and they're probably guests of honor to prove how much they love the wagon burners. And then probably the head guy for the whole thing would have been that one Negro in town married to a white woman. And they just had all kinds of fun, I guess. Okay. So much for Leith. I still haven't figured out what I'm going to do with that lot up there. I've been thinking of getting some Somalians in there, or some Ghanaians, or Ethiopians in there, and get them to live on that lot. Maybe drag in a used trailer in there and let them live there. And I'm sure the people of Leith would welcome with open arms. for a while until the press left. So anyhow, but on the other hand, I understand that you can't. You know, you're supposed to be free in this country. You're free, but we haven't been free to sell our property to who we want to sell it to for decades. Because they tell me that if you specify a certain race, that's illegal that you're going to sell it to. However, if you're going to lease it to, I don't know. But when I say Somalians, that's a nationality. That's not a race. So anyhow, or maybe I'll get me one of those. You remember that movie, what the hell was the name of it? I'm not going to rack my brain about it, but you'll remember it was that outer space movie made about 30 years ago. And where the computer ended up running things on the spaceship, and Hal was his name, the computer. And every once in a while you'd see this great big obelisk-type stone thing. And the movie's a little hard to figure out, as far as I'm concerned. But anyhow, I was thinking maybe putting something like that, a great big maybe 10, 20-ton concrete monument up there dedicated to white supremacy, or I don't know, think about that too. We're going to need a lot of cement to do that. We need to get somebody, one of our friends up in that area, to maybe build us a monument there, just a monument, have it all lettered and the whole bit, so that no matter what they did to it, they couldn't break it down. And they couldn't destroy the message on it or something like that. So anyhow, we got plenty of time to think it over, and the people of Leith got plenty of time to say, "Oh my God, what's he planning? What is it? What are those white supremacists got up their sleeve now, man?" Well, I've got this book from Carlos Whitlock Porter, about half read. I read a little slow, not because I can't read faster, but I like to read slower and digest it. And so I read about half of it, and it's really good. I really like it because it's down to earth and not real intellectual, and but intellectual enough, you know what I mean. So I'm going to read you some of it here. So don't run out the door, damn it. You know, you got to go to school once in a while. I know what you don't. There goes that Mr. reading out of a book again. Introduction. Many years ago, someone I know very well worked as a trained children's nurse in a world-famous hospital for disturbed children in London, with 4 years of training, RN, RSCN, and about 8 years of experience. All the other staff members were similarly qualified. The head of the unit was obviously a qualified physician with 20 years of experience working with disturbed children. One day, two Jews showed up, both of them 22 years old, one from South Africa, the other from Canada, neither one of them with any medical training or experience, but with a four-year psychological degree. They created total chaos throughout the entire hospital, from the day they arrived until the day they left. They said that the children should be allowed to express themselves by refusing to do what they were told, by hitting and kicking members of the staff, by spitting on members of the staff, and so on and so on. If you didn't agree with what they said, you were accused of not wanting to be progressive, and so on and so on and so on. They would argue the hind leg off a mule and were adept at proving that 2 and 2 = 6. The English being what they are, wishy-washy. In short order, these two Jews had everybody fighting and quarreling with everybody else. The doctor in charge of the unit simply opted out. In the end, after several months, they both left, presumably to wreak havoc elsewhere, and things returned more or less to normal. This is how the Jews always operate. at all times and in all places. They get everybody fighting with each other over crazy theories invented by them, and it only stops when they leave or are expelled. This has been the history of the Jews for 3,000 years, wherever they have ever lived, from the distant past to the present. That repression causes neurosis is a truism of the modern world, a notion invented and peddled chiefly by Jews and originally, but not exclusively, by the Freudians. Good manners, discretion, and decent sense of shame, a consideration for feelings and sensitivity of others, are a thing of the past. This applies chiefly to sexual matters. This does not apply, of course, to the repression of our natural resentment of Budinsky Yidniks and other byproducts of primeval ooze. What about our self-expression? What about our mental health? We should bust a gut or something? We might become neurotic already. It is the hypothesis of this practitioner, myself, that the millions of white Americans are suffering from neurotic symptoms caused by the repression of their racial feelings. Freud believed that neurosis can cure itself through the catharsis of analysis and expression of repressed feelings, hence the present volume that I am giving to you. Manifesto, Environmental Cleansing. No matter where we look, the world faces seemingly insoluble problems. In fact, these problems are not insoluble at all, as we shall soon see. We're told that the white man's way of life is incompatible with the future of the planet, and simultaneously we must create 800 million jobs in the third world to give the undeveloped countries a moderate standard of living. Of course, if the first part of the proposition is correct, our way of life must be restricted as much as possible to whites only, and there's no need for 800 million jobs. We're told that the Brazilians are cutting down the irreplaceable rainforest because of poverty and overpopulation to engage in industrial processes which have been obsolete in Europe for centuries, such as steel manufacture using charcoal for fuel. When told that they are endangering the world's oxygen supply, their reply, translated from their Brazilian nigger talk, is, "Man, we ain't gonna be the garbage can for cleaning up your dirty air." Note, actually what happened is that Brazil, like many countries, accepted foreign aid from Britain and the United States to modernize their steel industry while protecting their own products with high tariffs, as a result of which their steel industry is now ultra-modern, and we have none left. This was said to demonstrate the efficiency of the free market, unquote. Well, in that case, we must simply cut down on pollution. Fewer factories producing useless junk to be sold to Brazilians on that money we loaned them. We must also cut down on Brazilians' average IQ of street children. According to National Geographic, it's about 55. Fortunately, the Brazilians are doing their bit to kill themselves off with train surfing, elevator surfing, drug wars, and glue sniffing. Who says there's no order to the universe? We're told that we owe reparations for slavery. The problem here is, who gets the money? American niggers say Africans should get nothing because they sold their brothers into slavery, while Africans say American niggers should get nothing because they have benefited by living in America. No problem there. Africans get nothing because they sold their brothers into slavery, while American niggers get nothing because they have benefited from living in America, big time. We're told that we are the cause of all the niggers' problems. Of course, if that is so, the niggers are better without us and don't need our help. No problem there. Just separate from us. Go away. We're told that we gassed the Jews, exterminated the Indians, and enslaved the niggers, and that we are a race of criminals. Of course, if that is so, it would be absurd for us to feel guilty. I never met a criminal yet who felt guilty for anything, have you? On the contrary, we should reflect that there are criminal enterprises open to us which we have not even exploited yet. We're told that America must be run for the benefit of non-whites on the grounds of minority rights, while South Africa must be run on the benefit of non-whites on the grounds of majority rule. No problem there. America should be run for the benefit of whites on the grounds of majority rule, while South Africa should be run for the benefit of whites on the grounds of minority rights, white rights. We're told of a wave of criminal violence in Germany in which five Turks were recently burnt to death. No problem there. If the niggers in South Africa can burn each other's heads off with nothing but applause from the world's liberals, surely the Germans, in the interest of fairness, must be allowed to toast a Turk from time to time. Why not? Anything else would be a double standard, which is repugnant to our sense of justice. Since nobody sees a need to protect whites in South Africa, surely there is no need to protect Turks in Germany. We're told that homosexuals and lesbians are born that way and just can't help it. And simultaneously, we must allow them to turn the public school system, boy and girl scouts, children's television, and so on, into vehicles of gay propaganda, filling five-year-olds with guilt and shame for whatever heterosexual tendencies they may be fortunate enough to possess, arresting third graders for kissing girls on the playground, and so on and so on, ad infinitum, ad nauseum, thus breeding a nation of bull dykes and faggots, the world's first homosexual totalitarian dictatorship. Of course, if the first part of the proposition is correct, then there's no need for us for any indoctrination and propaganda. No problem there. We're told that we must practice birth control and murder 1.5 million of our own unborn children per year through abortion because, quote, there are too many people in the world. And simultaneously that we need 70 million African immigrants in Europe over the next 20 years, quote, to create economic growth. And to, quote, to pay the pensions for an aging population, unquote. No problem there. 70 million African immigrants swim with the fish because there are too many people in the world. Then we quadruple our birth rate in Europe, the white birth rate, to create economic growth and to pay the pensions of an aging population. The only thing we have to worry about is mad tuna disease. The nigger is a spiritual animal and can't feel a thing from the waist up. It's a proven fact. He doesn't mind if you burn his head off with a mixture of diesel fuel and melting rubber, but he suffers unspeakable agonies of soul at the sight of white's only sign on a park bench. How pitiless, how cruel, or so the liberals tell us. By some coincidence, I have a similar theory regarding liberals, which I intend to test at the earliest possible opportunity. Since I don't like to cause pain, I shall be most upset if this theory proves incorrect. I therefore propose the following experiment. We necklace a nigger radical like Nelson Mandela simultaneously with a white traitor like de Klerk or Helmut Kohl to test the pain threshold of different races. This would allow scientific knowledge to be gained despite the possible falsity of the original hypothesis. And that's the end of the manifesto, and then we go on to it. Hey, it gets wilder from here on in, and I love it, and we're going to get it out there, and I want every one of you people out there to get that book. And like I said yesterday, where was the address? http://www.cwporter.com. And I haven't gone there yet to see how much it costs and how to get them here, so. But he's over in Europe. I hope he had them printed here because we don't want to have to get into all that postage. You know, that gets really expensive. I don't know whether I told you yesterday, but Porter dedicated this book to A. Wyatt Man, one of the greatest comic artists since John Tenniel, a man of infinite wit, inexhaustible ideas, and unflinching courage, and a muse of fire. And that the person behind A. Wyatt Man is living quietly, at least the last I heard, in Georgia. I think with another movement activist, and I'm going to have to check because he's getting up there. One thing I like about Carlos Porter is he's an intellectual, an educated man, professional, and he's still got the balls to say the word nigger like most of these people who talk about race are afraid to say it. And that constitutes a weakness, considering the situation we're in. He also gives credit to J.B. Stoner, and J.B. Stoner was the first to come up with that AIDS is going to be one of nature's weapons. It's going to help us. And I remember when he was talking about this at least 25 years ago, because I was sitting in the front row right in front of him when he was saying it, and he traced it from Eastern Europe, I guess it was, to this, what do they call it, something sarcoma. Anyhow, he'd studied a lot of it, and I thought, well, this is going to be great. Well, because he went all over the country, thank God for AIDS. But then after a while, it seemed like it was dying down, and they were giving people with AIDS some of this stuff and was keeping them alive and so forth. But according to this book, it's moving fast now. It's back in the saddle, and they're trying to keep it quiet. But millions of people are going to be dying from AIDS and spinoffs from AIDS. So anyhow, nature will come to our rescue if we just have patience. Have you seen anybody much crazier than John Kerry and McCain? Those two guys, to me, exemplify stupidity all over the place. And it's amazing that the media, well, it's not amazing because we know what the media want. They want a couple of jackasses like that flapping their gums about stuff they don't even know anything about, and also flapping their gums about, oh, we're going to kick their ass, and we're going to level fines against them, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. Both of them are chicken shits with a lot of money from their wives. Both of them got their money from their wives. John Kerry through his wife, the tomato ketchup queen, and John McCain through his wife, the daughter of one of the biggest beer distributors in Arizona. So these are guys who were purely numbskull guys that married rich and have been able to use that to gain positions of power. And the big boys, the really big boys, must laugh their ass off at the stupidity of the things that these guys say. Like the other day, they caught Kerry talking off mic, and then they talked for 3 hours about what he meant by that. You gotta have a good laugh at this stuff, because if you don't, you'll be crying all the time. Well, I got a nice little note here today from Matt Hale's mother, our POW friend, our COTC friend. Friends and supporters, today I received a letter from Matt. He asked me to send along to you. Matt has filed a motion to reconsider the denial of his petition for freedom, as promised. He also wanted me to let you know that I'm typing his book, and it will be published. I'm asking you to dig deep into your pockets to donate for this cause. The book is very important, and I'm getting an education as I type it. It will be great reading for everyone that gets one. Matt Hill's mother. Well, I don't know what to say. There's all kinds of books. I'm surrounded everywhere I look by piles of books here. It hasn't changed much. We like to read those books. And I think books like this Carlos Porter book are very good because they're not great big thick 500-page books. And they get the point across really well. And they're easy to get around. I don't have much confidence in a book that Matt's going to write. I don't know. But because I know so much about the whole situation. Not everything, but enough to know that it is very sad and didn't need to happen. And I don't know about writing books about it. As far as appealing, it's not going to happen. They got him, and they're going to keep him. And if he happens to get out on some appeal, I'll be the most shocked man in the country. I sure will. It's too bad. It's very sad. I've been in contact for some time with an elderly gentleman up in Canada, of which I'm obviously not going to give his name. A really nice guy. He's in his upper 80s. And we've talked back and forth a little bit. But he was talking about, I guess last year, the year before, going to one of these probably revisionist conferences down here in the United States, having a big problem with the border, and they held him up and they questioned him and all that kind of crap. And I responded to him this way. I said, "Sorry, but I have not supported conferences in years, especially with you crossing the border. There's nothing you can get at these confabs that is not available on the web or by mail, and much cheaper. There's books all over the place. I view these get-togethers as a boon to the federal snoopers and the Jew infiltrators, plus being somewhat lucrative to a few organizers." I've watched that for years, too. They always drive nice cars. I guess I got a thing about nice cars. I view these yearly confabs as the watering holes in Africa, where the crocodiles bury themselves in the mud all year, patiently waiting the yearly wildebeest migrations and a very juicy meal. There are those that say Metzger is a cynical old bastard, and they're right. I adhere to Murphy's Law. You know, what can go wrong will go wrong. Save your money, or give some to me now and then. travel and hotel costs are expensive. I know I've done that in the past. I certainly don't do it anymore. Let me see here. Now that's about it for that. And then, let's see here. I got a reply from him. Tom, thanks for the advice. I agree in part. Paul agrees with you on me crossing the border. I don't know why it's considered to be a problem. Well, it's just, it's the Jews screwing around with the immigration situation, just like they are on the Mexican border. Of course, there's others besides the Jews, but the Jews are really, that's their big thing, immigration. And if they spot an anti-Semite coming across the border, they get all worried. They think the Third Reich is on the rise again. I spoke with the Department of Homeland Security afterwards in Washington. They told me I could cross any time. Probably talked to some white Aryan that didn't know all the bullshit. They also said the reason which was given undesirable visa applicant was odd, and the DHS hadn't heard of it before. I was trying to go to a conference for a few days. For that, I saw two DHS officers. Something must be going on, and I've forgotten to file for an FOIA request to figure out what. I was told that it needed now to be refiled with a verified signature. I understand that, well, you'll get a whole bunch of shit back. It'll all be it'll be redacted to where you can't probably get anything out of it. Used to, when they sent you an FOI file, I've got boxes up here from the feds, that you could read between the lines and who was the informant. In most cases, because they couldn't redact everything, and just by normal common sense, you figure out who was the bad guy. Anyhow, he says, I understand that you've got to be careful when you travel. Well, you sure do if they really want to go after you or somebody's after you. I want to be certain, though. Now, look what happened to the Farm Belt Fuhrer. He went over there to Denmark, and I think to sell his newspaper, National Socialist paper, and they grabbed him and abducted him and took him down to Germany. He was in prison for 3 years. He did nothing. All he's done was published a newspaper. So they can grab you, especially if you go from country to country. I think that's what happened to Ernst Zundel, as I recall. I think he came down into the United States and they grabbed him. And then he was taken over there to Germany. What did he spend? 10 years? Jeez. What a waste. Then he says, I want to be certain, though, that I can cross the border without issue. Well, like I say, don't cross the border. You don't need to cross the border. I like your comment to give you some money first and then go. Yeah. You know, I'm not much for asking for money. I never was. People like Hal Turner used to drive me up the wall, man. All they did was always talk, send me money, I'll save the world, just send me more money. I don't mind the cynicism, but I've got the hotel covered, and it's cheap enough to fly from Niagara Falls. I don't know where he's going. The problem is entry. I can make it happen with a bit of work on the side this summer. I've been screwed by idiots. To be honest, the last conference I went to cost me a bunch, and the conference before that cost me $900. I should have flown from Buffalo or Niagara Falls. Once you're in the U.S., the flights are much cheaper with many domestic airlines. Apparently, Governor Perry of Texas is finally putting the National Guard troops on the border. It's about damn time. Well, let me tell you something. Perry is the phoniest son of a bitch in any governor's mansion in this country, and that's pretty bad. He is phonier than a $3 bill. He knows that Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, is going to come down on him on this thing. But he's doing it to rally the party faithful, getting ready for a possible run for in 2016 for president. That's all this is about. I doubt whether those troops ever get down there. But if they do put them down there, Eric Holder is going to file a federal suit against him immediately. So, you know, there's still a lot of right wing left in people that they believe a lot of things and they get carried away. All is show. It's all show. It's all smoke and mirrors and all money. Follow the money trail. Anyhow, he goes on, I forgot to check the Irving event date for this summer, and sure enough, he was in Niagara Falls just across the Rainbow Bridge on July the 12th. David Irving, I guess. Well, he's written some good books, but what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? He cleans up the image of Hitler a little bit, and cleans up the image of the German military a little bit, and like that. But what's happening? Nothing's happening. He's lost a hell of a lot of money. They've taken him to court and stripped him of, I don't know how much of his personal wealth. And what did he gain? I mean, what's being gained? I think the left is gaining more about Israel and the Jews than the right ever did. Right now, the left wing are going after him like mad. It's funny as hell. And, of course, they'll all say, well, I can't be anti-Israel because I'm a Jew. Anyhow, he says, needless to say, I need to get this thing working. I'm my own worst problem. I appreciate you sending blah, blah, the keyboard, the mouse. I sold a computer that I picked up and sent it out to one of his friends. anyhow, that's the story there. And but people who are still infected with right-wingism, it's just almost impossible to get them out of them. They just keep wanting to drift back into that, to go down and hear some so-called experts get up and have this seminar someplace about probably revisionism or something, saying, you know, you're going to travel 1,000 miles and spend $1,500 or something to find out that Jews are nasty, niggers are dirty and violent, and most of the Christians are hypocrites. I mean, I don't have to go any place to know that kind of stuff. Do you? Hell no. Save your money, man. Your family needs the money. Yeah. Like I say, this KKK thing is getting out of hand. Like with the police, a couple of police, they may have gone to a meeting or something or read a Klan paper. It's gone viral all over the place. KKK recruiting in Streeter, Illinois, I guess it is. Police department has received about a dozen leaflets from residents, said Officer Robert Wood. KKK uses candy-filled goodie bags to recruit new members in South Carolina. Fruitland Park, that's the name of that place in Florida that they found a couple of cops that went to a KKK meeting or something. Let's see. Greenville, I guess that's North Carolina. Community plans rally to counter KKK event. Probably half a dozen Klansmen are going to have a weenie roast. FBI finds Florida police officers were also KKK Klansmen. Oh, wow. One officer was fired. The other resigned after an FBI investigation uncovered their ties. I've told cops, well, I don't talk to many cops, but I've said on this radio show many times, if you're a cop or in any position like that, you don't join anything. You don't join or go to the meeting. You don't put on a T-shirt. You don't do any of that shit if you want to maintain your occupation. So if you know anybody out there that's pro-white and all that kind of stuff, and they're a cop, tell them to stay cool. Don't join anything. Don't have any literature around it. Above all, don't talk to other cops about what you believe. Oh. Now, the ex-wife of the fired cop says police chief made both of them join the KKK. The ex-wife of the Florida cop fired for his alleged KKK ties said neither she nor her ex-husband really belonged to the Klan. Well, wait a minute. This looks interesting. Hold on there. Okay, now let's get this straight. The ex-wife of the Florida cop fired for his alleged KKK ties. I wish somebody explained ties. What do you mean? That could mean anything. Said neither she nor her ex-husband really belonged to the Klan. According to her, the couple joined as part of an undercover operation in 2008. To out another cop in the KKK. The police chief at the time flatly denies this. The Florida Police Department can't stop hiring KKK members. Ann Honeywell, whose ex-husband George was fired last week, told investigators that she and George allowed themselves to be recruited by former officer and KKK recruiter James Elkins in 2008. Ann was a police department secretary until 2010. Boy, they're really going into this. It goes on, and ABC's in it, and all the FBI's in on it, and everything else. Talk about a false flag operation. Talk about a false flag operation. It's unbelievable. Of course, I'm always happy to see the cops and the feds chasing all these yin-yangs around, and so the lone wolves can maintain their positions very quietly and very below eyesight. Now, if you want to get really nasty, you can start sending anonymous notes to police departments all over the country, especially the small ones, and say, this cop and that cop are in the KKK. They'll have a witch hunt going from coast to coast. Yeah, make sure they're cops you don't like. I mean, you know, come on. Like I told you, you can play dirty pool with them like we did in Phoenix way back when we went to the prostitutes and found out the dirty cops, the ones that were stepping out on their wives, and then we let the cops know that if they fucked with our people anymore, all these wives are going to get the information. And that harassment stopped real quick. Well, here's a new one. At least it's a new twist, how neo-Nazis are using hipster culture to stay relevant. From swastikas and shaved heads to New Balance sneakers and skinny jeans, these days it's not so easy to spot a neo-Nazi in Germany. Berlin-based Canadian journalist Thomas Rogers joins guest host Pia Chapakukudayaka, boy, what a name that is, to explain how fascists are using hipster culture to attract young members and to skirt laws banning Nazi symbolism. Gotta stop that Nazi symbolism. In a recent story for Rolling Stones, Rogers profiles a charismatic young man trying to make their extreme views more palatable for a new generation. One pair of neo-Nazis who teach vegan cooking on YouTube, for instance, will sincerely show you how to make tofu scramble while also speaking casually on Nazi ideology. The German media has dubbed this group Nazi hipsters, or Nipsters for short. Wow. Roger says that while his article on the Nipster moniker has attracted many cheeky remarks, the underlying trend is no joke. He also notes that a less visible community is harder to root out. We don't know where they're at. They're in the kitchen cooking. If there's someone you think might be at risk of falling into the scene, you'd be able to see what they look like and potentially be able to identify them as being at risk, notes Rogers, using teachers as an example. Now, everything is so subtle that it's so hard to define that it's no longer as easy to do. Because they're hiding, man. They're camouflaging themselves as cooks and so forth and doing all this kind of stuff, man. It's scary, man. They're everywhere. Yeah. Well, I guess the Jews are getting a little desperate here down in Israel. This is funnier than hell, man. I haven't even had a drink, man. The Israeli government is considering a bill that would ban the use of the word Nazi and other Third Reich imagery and language outside of a historical or educational context. Those who disobey the proposed law would face up to 6 months in jail and a fine of 100,000 shekels, roughly 30,000, I guess that's Canadian money there. For insight on this controversial idea, Gian speaks to Shimon Ohayon, the Israeli politician who introduced the bill. Ohayon says symbols like the swastika and the Star of David lose their meaning when they're casually thrown around or appropriated for political reasons. He also speaks to Haaretz journalist Alison Kaplan-Salmer, who offers insight on the heated public debate sparked by the bill. Critics, including the editors of her historic newspaper, argue that a ban on specific words and symbols is a significant threat to freedom of expression. What do you think? Is it wrong to use the word Nazi or other historically loaded terms as insults or as slang? Or should freedom of speech trump even the most hurtful use of languages? Well, yeah, let's see here. They had some comment. Anyhow, there you go. You got it. Oh, they're fighting over everything now. Everything's up in the air. Well, here's something a little interesting. Populist forces are rising up against Vladimir Putin in Russia for allegedly linked to neo-Nazi fighting forces first established in the Ukraine by Hitler's Third Reich in World War II. And the neo-Nazi populist groups in Greece and Cyprus are linked to the Nazi German occult societies of Golden Dawn and AOTO, Order of the Temple of the Orient. Oh my God, run for your lives. Run for your lives, man. See, it's the end. The Malaysian Airlines Boeing 777 was shot down by a missile while flying over the Ukraine. Yeah, we know all that. Paranoia over the stock market bubble is increasing. What's this guy doing? He's going nowhere, and he's just babbling. Oh, that was a preacher, I guess, because he says this. The book of Zechariah, the prophet, predicts a future time when all the nations and the peoples will be united against Jerusalem and attack it. Quote, behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about when they shall be in the siege, both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Oh, okay. Now, which drunk soothsayer said that 4,000 years ago? You know, guys make big money with prophecy. Boy, I'll tell you, the preachers really roll in the money in prophecy. I remember Herbert Armstrong years ago. Oh, man, he had money up the bazoo. And he went all over the world meeting with all the top leaders and everything, but he had the whole ball of wax, man. He predicted everything, and seemed like it always came back to Germany rising up again in the Fourth Reich. Now, another thing I can't understand about that Israel situation is they have thousands of Islamic Palestinians work in Israel every day. Now, I know they've got good security over there, but I don't think it could be that good. All these people got a lunch pail. Remember Johnny Cash? I got it one piece at a time, and it didn't cost me a dime. Well, if, say, 1,000 of those Palestinians put a hand grenade in their lunchbox, the Israeli security could probably only get half of them, and that'd be enough to wipe out downtown Tel Aviv. So I don't think that their Palestinians are fighting very hard. I mean, shooting off these 4th of July missiles that the United States give Israel, this elaborate defense mechanism to knock them down. It's like putting a red flag in front of a bull to be shooting those things at Israel. This whole thing stinks, doesn't it, to you? There's something really smelly about this whole thing. Well, that's another thing. There were a whole bunch of 800 AIDS researchers were killed with that Ukraine shoot down of that airliner. Now that's a big conspiracy. Well, I can't say that I'm upset about it because I don't want to see AIDS cured. Do you? I mean, you know, I'm sorry. I got to be honest about it. I don't want to see AIDS cured, especially in the third world. So now they got, let's see what they've got more about that. Well, let's listen to this little piece about the big money and the AIDS research.
And not a single cure in sight. We are claiming more and more money to continue the same vicious cycle.
Who really benefits from the billions upon billions of dollars spent each year on AIDS research?
Those that control and maintain the HIV hypothesis of AIDS are two basic institutions, the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, and the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. Both of these institutions will probably come as a surprise to the public to learn that they are military organizations. It was certainly a surprise to me to learn this. The leaders of the National Institutes of Health and the CDC have uniforms. They have military ranks. And as everybody who's ever been in the military knows, there's an information flow from top to bottom. Military structures are incompatible with free and open discourse and debate which is supposed to be what science is about. When you have these military structures in the CDC and the National Institutes of Health, you can control the debate. You can control the information flow. Not only that, since the National Institutes of Health are the primary source of funding for all academic, medical, scientific research, they can control who gets funding to do what research. And in that fashion, they can control what gets published and, more importantly, what you exclude.
For more than 15 years, the American public had been told that the HIV virus is the sole cause of AIDS. Those members of the scientific community who have questioned this dogma, the three-part equation HIV equals AIDS and equals death, have been suppressed.
Peter Duisberg at the University of California, Berkeley campus, is seen, as is often done with maverick scientists or others, as someone who is now dangerous. This is typically the way such mavericks are treated. His funding has been cut off. Graduate students are encouraged not to take his courses, and I think his administrative duties have included being in charge of the department picnic. This is a brilliant scientist who should be and is at the height of his powers, and he has not been treated as one would expect of, one, a brilliant scientist, and, two, a supposedly liberal campus like the University of California, Berkeley.
Peter is a very scholarly person in addition to being brilliant, too. He's very careful. He doesn't say anything that he can't support. And also one of the most brilliant people in... surely the most brilliant virologist, possibly the most brilliant, you know, molecular biologist around. He was a really well thought of guy too, because of his ideas, the whole field. I mean, in cancer, he's the guy that led him into the whole oncogene thing, you know, big research bonanza. Anybody who could order a little kit from some company and hire a couple of technicians could be a cancer researcher because of things that Peter opened up. And then Peter said, no, I don't think that's actually the cause of cancer. And that made those guys a little bit angry. And then he comes along and does the same thing for AIDS. He said, you know, I think we're on the wrong track here. And for some reason, you know, the second time, it was almost like nobody even had to argue with him. Oh, it's just Peter again, ruining our fun, telling us that all this easy research stuff that we know we can do now for years and the American people will pay for it, that we can't, we're not, that we shouldn't be doing that. And Peter did that again. He did that twice. We need a lot more Peters.
In other words, like many things, they're spending billions of dollars on something they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Meanwhile, whatever you call it, Carposa Sarkozy or whatever, or AIDS or whatever, is in reality, and we're going to get into that out of this book by Carlos Porter of it sweeping through the world, while these plastic scientists, most of them, are simply living on the dole, and most of them are Jews, you know. They've been researching cancer forever, but there's cures for cancer. There's no doubt in my mind that there's cures for cancer, but what are you talking about? You find a cure for cancers? What are we going to do to make all that money and drive Cadillacs, baby, and have those big houses in Miami Beach? Well, that's about it for today. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day, and you take it easy in the meantime, and be careful out there. It's squirrely. It's squirrely, man, like Jonathan Winters used to say.
And Joe Pesci nabbed an Oscar by showing he could turn on a dime.
Funny how? I mean, what's funny about it?
Not only does his improvised diatribe explain his character.
He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how?
It also stops his buddies dead in their tracks and has audiences holding their breath.
I mean, funny, like I'm a clown, I amuse you, I make you laugh. Get the fuck out of here, you're telling me.
You motherfucker, I almost had him, I almost had him. You stuttering prick, you.
Some things in life are bait, they can really make you mad. Other things just make you swell and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and twiddle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on! Always look on the bright side of life. You're in the World Cup, and all your hopes are up, and everybody wants your team to win. And they go and let you down, and come sleep you back to town. It's time for this daft song to begin. So, always look on the bright side of life. Cheer up, next time. Always look on the bright side of life. Life is quite absurd, and yet the final word, you must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sin, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it,
it's your last chance anyhow. So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
But that's the joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you.
And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on, cheer up.
Always look on the bright.
Bye-bye.